Good morning.
Hello. My name is Andrea Wehner.
And I am Karen Sickenader. And today we are going to be discussing the new emergency ruling that was handed down from the Missouri Attorney General yesterday and the implications that go along with that and what we've been able to figure out and some of the information.
There's a whole lot of them.
Yes. Yes. So you want to kind of go through what the emergency ruling says?
Sure. So essentially, the Attorney General of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, signaled in March that he was going to put some bans in place on gender-affirming and transitioning care for transgender Missourians. In the past, it's been specific to youth, transgender youth. Yesterday, he initiated an emergency rule that applies to all Missourians, including adults over 18 who are trans and seeking out care. And essentially, his rule bars people from seeking out gender-affirming care unless a whole criteria of stipulations are met, including you have to see a physician, a psychotherapist, for a certain period of time. It's like 18 months or 15 months, 10 of which have to be with the same provider. And you have to be cleared of not being autistic, which is a problem, and not having any sort of other mental health issues, anxiety, depression. Those have to be identified and quote unquote resolved. And then there are several other pieces in there that talk more specifically about just various studies that he's citing and has to have. There's this whole section on here that says you cannot get the covered gender transition intervention. That's what he calls it. If a physician's website or in person or provided orally by a provider doesn't mention information about this like laundry list of 23 different sources basically saying gender transition, puberty blockers, hormone replacement therapy, et cetera, are all bullshit. And so if you were somebody seeking that out, you have to listen to your provider tell you, spout all of this quote unquote data, why what you want to do is bad. There are several things in here. I could go on and on, but
so
I'll let you jump
in. Me read the short list from the press release.
Yes.
So from the press
he released
release,
a one pager.
Yes. Well, this is the press release announcing the emergency ruling, not the press release for the emergency ruling. So
yeah,
in this, it says prohibiting gender transition interventions when a provider fails to ensure the patient has received a full psychological and psychiatric assessment consisting of not fewer than 15 separate hourly sessions over the course of not fewer than 18 months to determine, among other things, whether the person has any mental health comorbidities. Ensuring that any existing mental health comorbidities of the patient have been treated and resolved. Adopted and follow a procedure to track all adverse effects that arise from any course of covered gender transition interventions for all patients beginning the first day of intervention and continuing for a period of not fewer than 15 years.
15 years.
Right. Obtain and keep on file informed written consent. Ensure that the patient has received a comprehensive screening to determine whether the patient has autism. Oh, ensure at least annually that the patient is not experiencing social contagion.
And social media addiction.
Yes. Yes. That's where we're at in our society right now, is that they are calling social media an addiction.
Now, do you spend too much time on TikTok? Does that mean that influences
yes,
gender dysphoria? Come on.
Well, yes. Yes. Because you're being exposed to other people with information other than what your cult around you, your church or whatever, is telling you what you should think, feel, and believe.
It's the same right? sort of principle of defunding our libraries, too. Like, the more access
yes.
to
yes.
information and differing perspectives you had, the more problematic you are to obtaining
yes.
and maintaining the status quo.
Yes. God forbid we are teaching people how to think. that is the ultimate thing that turns people into a liberal.
Critical thinking skills.
I said this on KOPN the other night that, quoting John Stewart, reality has a liberal bias. And that's where we're at. There's a lot of problems in here.
Yes.
And one of those being that this order demands that other mental health issues are resolvable. I'm a 40-year-old woman, and in my life, I have anxiety and depression. They're not getting resolved anytime soon. This is just who I am.
Right, right. I have all the skills and tools in my toolbox, you know, therapy, medication, etc., to treat my anxiety. And it's, guess what? It's still here. I think it's sort of unrealistic to say, let's identify your mental health comorbidities and resolve them. I think the best that we can do when it comes to mental health is give you what you need to live your healthiest and best life. It does not just go away.
And what I will say about that is my mental health issues were not identified until the rise of social media. And I was able to talk to people around the world with the same life experiences that I have had in order to help me understand, hey, you should seek out a doctor.
Absolutely.
And maybe get some sort of diagnosis on what's going on there, because the things that you're saying and the thoughts that you're having, they're not normal. And I didn't know that because I grew up in a family with a history of depression and anxiety. Guess what? I thought this was normal. I just thought this is the way that people exist, and it's not. And there's treatment, and I can do better for myself. And I wouldn't have had access to that information without the internet, without talking to other people from around the world. And I'm grateful for that.
I think that part of the argument that social contagion is playing a factor into there being more folks identifying as trans is just really problematic at best. For a lot of folks, like you've said, social media and the internet in general is liberating. If you're somebody who is experiencing these feelings, the, you know, whether it is mental health issues or gender dysphoria, whatever, and you have the ability to see yourself in somebody else's experience and say, you know what, I'm not alone. Like, I'm not crazy. It doesn't have to be this way. It can be better. That's liberating.
It's building community.
Yes, yes. And that's what we should be encouraging.
Yeah. Well, and it's really interesting and ironic because our country has this history of building community with each other, but within a very specific sort of way. And we see a lot of that. Again, I'm going to go back to churches, right? We see a lot of this building community within your church and relying on people within your church who believe the same things that you do.
Sure.
And this has allowed the spread of Christianity. They encourage it. Like, I come from a very religious family, and one of the things that was heavily, heavily, heavily encouraged was evangelism, going out and telling other people and bringing other people into the community.
Yeah.
So when we have access to a significantly wider community, we're going to be able to find our people. And that is what social media has allowed us to do. It has allowed us to really claim our own truths.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say that's why you and I are friends, is we met on social media. We would have met, I think, in other instances, but it is this idea of broadening your edges and your horizon to encompass more experiences. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but that's like the basis for all of the legislation we're seeing at the state level right now is no, don't broaden your horizon. Stay in your little bubble, stay in your silo and your circle of people, and anybody who threatens that is a problem.
And this is going back to what we're seeing happening in Tennessee right now, where we had two people who were expelled from the legislature. Why did they do that? Well, the reason why they do that is they are trying to silence opposition because they don't have anything left. And this is the entire point of all of this, is to silence their opposition. And things like banning TikTok, they don't want people to access other people with thoughts and feelings that might be contrary to what they want to prove. Defunding our public libraries, cutting people off from information in retaliation for the lawsuit filed against banning books. Oh my gosh. We're retaliating by defunding public libraries. Are we? What? And I know there is this fear now that we have this precedent set in Tennessee for expelling people from the legislature. There is a fear that it's going to start happening in other states, that democratically elected representatives are going to be expelled for nonsense reasons in order to silence opposition. And this year's legislative session in Missouri has been, I believe, particularly heinous.
Are you familiar with the power and control wheel?
Would you like to explain it?
Sure. So it's essentially a domestic violence issue. It's about physical violence, sexual violence, but it's this whole wheel, and it's all of the tactics that abusers use to keep their victims in a relationship. And honestly, I can see this translating to what we look like in the state of Missouri right now with our legislature. They're using coercion and threats. They're using intimidation. Mm-hmm. They're using emotional abuse. They're isolating people. They're minimizing, denying, and blaming the experience and the people here. They're using children. They're using male privilege, and they're using economic abuse, like preventing people from their livelihoods. And when they use all of that, it's just cyclical. It's all of the options that they have to just keep abusing people. So I would say the state of Missouri legislature is an abusive partner to the people of Missouri.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. 100%. And why? What do they solve from that?
Nothing. Just creating more division and more anger. I mean, we talk about the culture wars often. And I think as much as we have folks in the legislature talking about how we want to solve the culture wars, or the left is just promoting the culture wars, it is definitely not just the left. I'm sure. Are we guilty of that on the left and the progressive side? I'm sure that there is some aspect of that, but to sit there and say that it's one sided, I think is not great.
Well, and absolutely, I think I've seen other people discussing their rights culture wars and how it's not going to go the way that they think it's going to go for them, because what we're seeing is, in light of these culture wars, it's actually causing a lot of people to pull back from them and start going a little bit more left.
Yeah, I imagine it's having a little bit of the opposite of effect that they intended. I mean, you start alienating people. Like, how much further are you willing to go?
Yeah.
And where does the line exist?
Yeah. I mean, they've already, with the Dobbs decision, are trying to harm women. That's half the country, right? And it's not just women, it's anybody who has the ability to give birth. So it's more than half of the country.
Right.
And now they're going after transgender, they're going after the LGBTQIA community as a whole. Yes, we do have a lot of anti-trans bills, but we also have the anti-drag bills, right? Yeah. We have legislation saying that people are not allowed to wear costumes. What? What I will say, and what I am repeating, and what we need more people to say and repeat, is this is what fascism looks like.
Yeah.
And we are in the middle of it.
I break out my Madeleine Albright book, Fascism, A Warning. I have that upstairs, and I'm just like, man, there's some similarities here that are glaring and uncomfortable.
Yes. Like, we are not at the beginning stages of fascism. We are 10 years into it.
Yeah. And maybe more in some instances.
Yeah. When people ask, how did the Nazis come to power? Well, it didn't happen overnight, right? It was a series of steps that were taken over many years. And we are in the middle. We are in the middle of it. We are not at the beginning stages.
There are some folks right now that have brought up the fact in the state of Missouri, if you're getting a divorce and you're pregnant, you can't get divorced while you're pregnant.
Yes.
And thinking that that is a new thing, like, oh my God, look at what the legislature is doing right now. And it's like, no, that's been in place for a long time. A long time. I had a friend who was pregnant and trying to get a divorce like 7 years ago, and yeah. she couldn't, you know, yeah. like, this isn't new. It is just louder and more in your face.
Yes.
And growing.
And the question is, why is it louder? Well, it's louder, I would argue, because we have social media where we can share this information easily with other people in order yeah. to let people know what's happening. And
for better, for worse, I would say, like,
yes,
you've got all sides using social media in a similar type fashion.
Well, yes. And what we see coming out of the right is they are using social media in order to push misinformation yes. at an alarming rate. And unfortunately, misinformation gets shared at 6 times the rate that factual information gets shared. So
I saw something recently at, so my job, my normal 9 to 5, 8 to 5, whatever job, deals with journalists. And we had an entire session at our conference last month about mis and disinformation and the role of journalists in addressing that. And there was this discussion about shifting towards pre-bunking. So moving away from a retroactive, responsive, mm-hmm. you know, piece put out when somebody puts out bullshit information, and instead anticipating, I know where this is going. I'm going to go ahead and yes. debunk this on the front end. And I could see where that would be beneficial as a strategy beyond just journalists. When we're talking about what is our role to address mis and disinformation.
Yes. And I also have my background rooted in journalism. I, at one point in my life, used to work for ABC News, which, and part of that was just the amount of backlash as journalists that you get from people who think that you're peddling information that's not accurate. And even now in my life, I recently, I left a comment on somebody's Facebook post, and I had somebody tell me that I need to stop listening to the lamestream media because they are filling my head with wrong information, blah, blah, blah. And I countered him, and I'm like, listen, I used to work for the news. I no longer allow news to enter my house just because I don't like television in general. I don't like the noise. I don't like the nonsense of it. But I also work in a space where I regularly write press releases.
Yeah.
And I regularly write the news. It's not that I'm listening to other people and repeating misinformation or what they claim is misinformation that's actually factual information. It's that we're the source.
I want to add just a giant caveat to that, just because in the AG's emergency rule yesterday, he cites a story from the New York Times about the discussion and controversy over gender affirming care. So journalists also have a responsibility not to fan the flames, also to dig in and to also understand what their work can be utilized for. So I have a friend who's a journalist also, and they said, man, I really wonder how this is going to show up in the New York Times impact tracker. You know, what are they going to say that the impact of this story was? So I think we need to be thinking critically about how we're reporting information too, and how it can be used. Like in this particular story, like the Times sort of centered angry parents over, mm-hmm. you know, somebody said over desperate youth and anti-trans activists over the community that they seek to eliminate. Like it is intentional when we are talking about things that we need to be including the people that are most impacted by this. And so when yes. we're reporting, we need to include those folks too. But that's my tangent, my work tangent. But I just noticed, I found it really interesting, the sources and the citations that he included in yeah. his emergency rule yesterday, because it's an 11-page ruling. And I would say the majority of that are what he has deemed as credible sources and data that contribute to that. I have not dug into every right. single source that he cited, but that one did catch my eye.
Well, and here's the thing, when it comes to what is news, people's opinions are not news.
Correct.
They are not facts. They are not data. They are anecdotal stories. And to cite anecdotal stories as a fact
right.
is so problematic. And people really need to have a good understanding of, is what you're watching or what you're reading an opinion piece? Are we citing sources that are citing their non-professional opinion? And do those carry the same weight as knowledgeable professionals? If we're not looking at the facts, the actual things that are true and provable, then what really are we reading, watching, listening to?
And that's why we need libraries, y'all.
Yes, and why we don't need our attorney general making emergency rulings based on anecdotal stories. I think that was one of the...
Our attorney general seems to forget that he's not a policymaker. He's not a lawmaker.
Right.
But he's positioning himself to become one, and it's very obvious.
Now, I kept calling it a ruling, but it is not a ruling. What he has done is he has filed an emergency rule. He will need to file a rule in the Missouri Register. Most likely he already did. And it will be in the May 15th Register. The emergency rule stays into effect until either its expiration. He filed a final order of rulemaking after notice and comment, or until a court overturns it. The rulemaking process is complicated. Basically, he filed a proposed rule. He goes through notice and comment. He has to reply to the comments
right.
and file a final order of rulemaking. Before he does that, he needs to send the order of rulemaking to the Joint Committee on Rules to give the legislature 30 days to hold a hearing if needed to stop the rule. So there's some time. This is not something that is going to be going into effect in 2 weeks because the process isn't yet completed. Oh, this was interesting. I wanted to bring this up. The summary cited by the emergency order continues to suggest that gender-affirming care be given to minors in exceptional cases and advocates for more research. So even though this is going into effect, it's not a total ban. And yes. There are going to be cases where people can continue to receive their care. I'm not sure that he's necessarily highlighted what those exceptional cases are, which if that's not clearly defined, then I think there's going to be a very wide loophole that people could potentially walk through.
Sure. That's kind of the state's MO sometimes, is create legislation that is very gray and not well defined, in hopes that it'll trip somebody up into making it more of an issue. We see that in, you know, recent legislation about homeless encampments, for example. Nobody understands what the damn law says because it is right. It's a mess, but that seems to yes. be how the state does business.
And sometimes that is done on purpose to leave sure. things in the gray area. And we're not going to see any precedent set until a lawsuit is filed.
And I feel like that's well on the way.
Ruling from a judge.
Yeah.
Sure, sure. Well, we already have lawsuits filed against this. Planned Parenthood has filed a lawsuit.
I imagine ACLU maybe Promo's going to join in. I don't know if they'll file it on their own or if they'll just roll with ACLU. But the folks are seeking out what legal strategies there are to kill something like this.
Sure. And what I've been suggesting to my friends who are transgender is send off some emails to some of these organizations, because we potentially have the ability to do a very large class action lawsuit.
Yeah.
As opposed to just the organizations themselves. They might decide to not want to do that for various reasons that I don't understand because I'm not a lawyer. But at least put the information out there. And is there a way where we can consolidate our information about how many people this is actually affecting? So recommendations. I mean,
that's a hard data set to gather, because there is inherent risk in coming forward with things. You know, yes. If we've already got a tip line set up for providers or people who are being nefarious in their care of transgender folks, that's risky to come forward and say, you know what, I've been impacted by this, or I will be impacted. And so it takes a lot of trust and courage for people to come forward.
Well, and again, it's another tool used by Nazis, gather information on who these people are, so that then we can do what we can to exterminate them, unfortunately. There was a rabbi out of St. Louis posting recently on TikTok, and the quote that stood out was, "What Missouri Republicans are implementing is absolutely no less than ethnic cleansing." And this is coming from a Jewish rabbi.
Yeah.
And he's right.
I've seen the word genocide thrown around quite a bit intentionally in that area.
Yes. And I do fundamentally believe that is their goal with anybody who identifies as a member of the LGBTQIA community, is they want to eliminate those people. Okay, so this morning on Twitter, our illustrious state senator, Kayla Browden, who represents Columbia, Missouri, well, Boone County and Cooper County, posted, "I am a Republican from Columbia. I see people who I know and I know disagree with my politics all the time. We usually exchange pleasantries and ask how our families are and go about our business. Twitter is not real life. Politics shouldn't be so all-consuming that nothing else matters in your life. Specifically for a person of faith, this view of the world is just simply sad. I hope he gets the help that he needs to live a normal life." And this is in response to the rabbi from St. Louis who is talking about this being ethnic cleansing.
I take immediate issue to the fact that Twitter is, quote, not real life. When Kayla Browden tweeted out after a drag show, you know, small drag show at the Columbia Values Diversity Breakfast, when he tweeted out that that was a problem, I got hate mail. So that is impacting my real life because he put that out there, knowing damn well what it was going to do, you know?
What I will say about Kayla Browden's tweet is that most of these policies do not affect his day-to-day life because he's a white man and they are not designed to marginalize or erase him. When he is out there writing and passing legislation that directly impacts my life, guess what? I'm going to be political because it's affecting my life, my day-to-day life. When they are out there trying to make birth control illegal, that affects my everyday life. That affects my ability to get regular medical care in case of potential pregnancy or desire for abortion. If I am forced to have a child, if I am forced to, I don't have a husband to support me. So what does that look like? What do these actual things that they're doing in Jeff City, how do those things affect my life? Because they do affect my day-to-day life.
Absolutely.
And we also have to remember that every single thing is political. Everything's political. And he says that politics shouldn't be so all-consuming that nothing else matters in your life. Well, everything's political. And maybe we need to make it so that it's affecting his everyday life.
I mean, that's one way.
So, yeah, takeaways.
What are our takeaways? Our takeaways are register to vote.
Certainly register to vote.
Show up to vote. Vote in every single election.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As always, contact your representatives. Let them know your
displeasure
with the current state of affairs. And lastly, for me, I would say check on your trans friends and family right now. It's really easy to just post something on social media about your dismay of the whole situation. But we need to check on our people. We need to check in and make sure they're okay and offer them support, whatever that looks like, even if that just means sitting in the same room with them while they're angry and upset. But we need to do that too.
Yeah, I agree. And right here in our tiny little town of Columbia, Missouri, this has really been transformed into more of a safe haven for our LGBTQIA community. So we have a lot of those people right here.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, proudly, the city of Columbia has received a perfect score on the Municipal Equality Index from the Human Rights Campaign for, I think, 5 or 6 years running now. So it is a priority of at least the city government and our boards and commissions to make sure that we're welcoming and inclusive in our community to anybody and everybody. And so come to Columbia. We're going to try our damnedest to advocate for you and make sure that you feel welcome and safe here.
Yeah. And safe is the key word, because I know there's a lot of people right now who don't feel safe. There's a lot of people who are potentially planning exits from the state, which is something they want. They want people, they being Republicans, they want people who don't believe as they do to leave, because then they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, it's less of a battle.
I would argue that staying here takes a real act of courage, and I encourage people to do
it.
I encourage people to vote, because that's going to be the thing that stops them in their tracks.
Yeah, and it's not just the responsibility of the trans people to stay here. I think Democrats and other folks of differing identities and privilege, like, we need you to stay here too and get to work. Like, don't just make the trans folks, you know, the people of color, the women in our community, be the ones who have to put themselves in the line of fire. Other people need to step up too.
Yeah, because, you know, guess what? Some people aren't going to have the luxury of leaving. That takes privilege.
Yep.
Okay, well, I think that about covered everything that we need to cover for today. And in light of horrible, horrible stuff that's coming down, we will touch base with this a little bit later to see how it kind of unfolds. I'm sure there are going to be some updates. I'm hoping that these lawsuits are going to get into the courtroom and a stay will be issued or the rule will be struck down. We'll really see what happens.
We'll pay attention. That's all we can do right now is we pay attention. Don't just ignore it.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And I guess we'll be signing off for today, and you'll hear more from us later.
Bye.